Hi, this is Daniil Hartman and Yossi Klein Halevi from the Shalom Hartman Institute, and this is For Heaven's Sake, our special edition, now 208 days, Israel at War. And our theme for today is a different dimension or a different front of the war, what we're calling the third front. If the first front is Gaza, second front is the north, Hezbollah and north, there is a third front to this war that we've never talked about. We talked indirectly. And that is the front that many of our friends in North America and also around the world are experiencing. Some call it anti-Semitism. Some are calling it anti-Zionism, which is like anti-Semitism. It's focused on campuses and the demonstrations and the tensions on campus have reached a height this last week or two. But even though, and we're going to talk about campuses, when you speak to Jews around the world, the experience is that they also feel that they're on a front. Something has been destabilized. Something has changed. And today we want to talk about that third front. But in particular, focusing on campuses. And I want us to focus on different dimensions. Number one, how do we understand what's happening here? What do we think is the crux of this? What impact is it having, or how do we understand the larger implications of this for Jews around the world? And the third dimension of it is, what does this mean for Israelis? Israelis are talking about this both personally and in the press to a, I don't want to say an unprecedented degree, because I don't know what's precedent anymore. I don't even know what life used to be like, but to a degree that I don't remember. And I want to talk about that because this story is playing a very interesting role in Israeli life, this third front, what it means and what it doesn't mean and what role it's playing. And I want to start with the current tensions, the current demonstrations taking place, the sit-ins, the tent cities, in tens of campuses across North America, also in many campuses around the world. You know, and the language is of this huge anti-Semitic outbreak across campus life. And Yossi, I've been waiting to talk to you about this because I'm a skeptic, but I'm a little skeptical about my skepticism. In other words, I don't hold by my skepticism, but it doesn't mean I can stop being a skeptic. I feel that putting this under the framework of anti-Semitism somehow just doesn't feel right to me. Doesn't mean that there aren't anti-Semites there, and there are. And it doesn't mean that there aren't people who are embracing anti-Semitic tropes, and there are. There is some violence, negligible, let's be honest. There's drums, there's demonstrations, there's aggressive talk, hyper-aggressive talk. But I'm trying to put my hand on it. And, you know, of course, when people are speaking about, you know, I just read today, some group of professors said from UCLA, this is just like the 1930s. They lose me. So this is my skepticism. Now, my challenge is I don't want to belittle this either, but we have to understand this. And so let's start talking. You were just on a number of campuses, but again, you know, depends on your experience that day or what people were. It's not, you know, these experiences change. But Yossi, do you think using anti-Semitism, let me try this question and see if you're willing to answer it. And if you don't and you wanted me to ask you a different question, that's okay too. Then just answer the question you wanted me to ask. But my first question will be, deal with my skepticism a second if you can. It's a two-part question. The first part is, do you think anti-Semitism is the correct label, lens through which to see all that's this larger phenomena, as large as it is? How do you explain it? What's your Torah about what's happening? What's the issue that we have to face?
So, first of all, I have to tell you honestly, Daniil, I don't really care if it's technically anti-Semitism or not. The campuses are erupting in a way that they haven't in 50 years. Around the issue of Israel, the Jewish state, having no right to exist. That in itself is such an assault against my being that I don't really care if they like Jews, personally don't like Jews, if they think Jews have big noses, Jews are cheap. You want to destroy my country. You want to destroy my home. You want to destroy the hope that sustained the Jewish people in the last 80 years. There's no greater threat to me than that. And so this argument of, is it technically anti-Semitism or not? Personally, I don't need it. Having said that, let me address your skepticism. I agree with you that the motives of many, maybe most, of the students are not classically anti-Semitic. There are Jews among them too. But I do feel that in one way, this is an anti-Semitic moment. And by that, I mean that when you criminalize the Jewish state and you obsess with the sins, real or perceived, of Israel, far more than you do to any other country, what you're doing is falling into an old pattern of turning the Jew into the symbol of whatever a civilization regards as its most detestable qualities. In our time, this is the civilization of human rights, of anti-racism. The Jewish state becomes the symbol of racism and now genocide. So it falls into a very old pattern. And the burden of proof for me is not on the Jews to prove that this is anti-Semitism, but on those who are repeating this old historical pattern to show how it's not anti-Semitism. So that's one piece of this. Another is that you had asked what the sources of this eruption are. And I think there are two. The first is a decades-long campaign, which Israel and most of the diaspora ignored or underplayed. And that was laying the ground for the systematic dismantling of the entire Zionist story. From its origins, which are rooted, according to anti-Zionism, in 19th century colonialism, rather than in the longing of an indigenous people to return home, to what's happening in Gaza today. There's one thread connecting the dismantling, the systematic dismantling of the Zionist and Israeli story. And so that's one way in which we've gotten to this moment. Another is what's been playing out on campuses, of course, over the last decade or two, and that's intersectionality and the progressive mindset and the elevation of the victim to a stature that victims never had in history, which is the victim as the embodiment of all that is good. Now, certainly that's the antithesis of the Israeli ethos. We despise victimhood. And yet what is playing out in progressive culture is the elevation of the victim. The victim is the embodiment of good. So the convergence of these two and the overlapping of these two processes, the systematic dismantling, deconstruction of Zionism, along with the rise of the victim, I think has set the ideological ground for what's happening on campuses. And I agree with you. The motive certainly doesn't have to be anti-Semitism, but the consequences, again, for me, are worse than the mere dislike or even hatred of Jews.
First of all, thank you. Thank you very much. I want to reflect on a couple of the things that you said. And first of all, I very much appreciate you saying, I don't care what you call it. It just doesn't matter to me. But it actually matters a lot, Yossi.
I agree with you. But to me personally, it doesn't
matter. No, and I love that. I love that. Now we could talk. Because you're saying, listen, there's a danger here. They're hurting me. They're hurting the Jewish people. They're hurting something that I cherish and that is critical to my life. Call it whatever you want to. This is dangerous and it's something I have to deal with. But there's something about the label of anti-Semitism which does a number of things when we use it, which are, I think, fuddle, if there is such a term. And if there isn't, I want to make it up. it's like make some if making something fuzzy, I'm going to call it fuddle.
You have made up the word, but I like it a lot.
They fuddle our thinking.
It's a combination of fuzzy and muddy.
Okay, good. I know. You know, one of the things when you make Aliyah when you're 13 is you make up Hebrew words and you make up English words, and you just. But that's why sometimes I like lecturing, because people don't have to understand every word. They get just the whole, you know, and somewhere along the line, they give you a look. But I just saw your body. So I knew, oops, maybe this wasn't in our Oxford dictionary. So they're fuddling our thought processes. See, because when I see something as anti-Semitism, I feel no need to intellectually engage with it. None. It is just simple, pure evil, which grows either out of the evil to which humankind is capable, evil growing out of different religious ideologies, and anti-Semitism, when I use the word, I get into defense mode. And I think in many ways, it's just, you have to deal with your sources. I don't even want to understand it. Anti-Semitism is a word which for me shuts down my need to reflect. I get into defense mode.
That's interesting. That's a really interesting new definition of anti-Semitism.
Now, and here, could I just say something to you? And like, if I don't agree with this afterwards, I want to take it back and none of our listeners will have heard it. Okay. It's just, you'll see, this is just between me and you.
Right.
I don't feel that way about anti-Zionism. I feel anti-Zionism compels me intellectually. I can't shut down anti-Zionist critique the way I shut down an anti-Semitic critique. When I call somebody an anti-Semite, there is a moral depravity that I associate with you, which I don't even want to understand. Now, maybe this is because it lacks the same history, but I find to anti-Zionism itself, I feel that I both need to and I want to engage and respond. So for those anti-Zionists who are anti-Semites, and by the way, there are, let's take within this campus phenomena, a certain percentage of people for whom anti-Zionism is just a way of shielding anti-Semitism or hiding. It's just another framework for it, not just because it's against Jews. There's this deep, irrational, evil hatred of the Jewish people, of Jewish power, of Jewish success. There is that dimension. Some of it might come from Islamic circles, not all Muslims, some of it might come from Arab or Palestinian circles. It gets associated with Holocaust denial. You see it as part of a whole tradition, and people could say, you know, kill the Jews or genocide again. Like, there's these anti-Semitic terms that then get used here, and I think they're just, there might be closet, and many of them aren't even closet anti-Semites. But that's a very small group of this anti-Zionist critique. And there is an anti-Zionist critique, which is part of, as you said, the issue of the elevation of victimhood. I think that's an intellectual challenge we have to respond to, because that faces us as Jews, but it's corrupting all of our moral discourse. This bashing of colonialism, like, there's stories about the world which are profoundly dangerous for all of Western society. And the fact that they're picking on us, we have to win that intellectual war. And that intellectual battle is not over yet. It's not over yet. Now, there are some who have shifted, who start as moral critics of Israel. Instead of criticizing Israel's actions, it leads to a delegitimization of the existence of Israel. And that's part of a duplicity that occurs. Other countries could do evil and you condemn their acts. Israel, for some, when it does evil, you undermine the legitimacy of the state. Now, that's not necessarily, even though it can be, an anti-Semitic move. It's a morally and intellectually flawed argument that I believe that we Jews have to engage in. We have to engage in it because many of the people who are advocating for it are part of the people who we share our world with and our universe with. And some of it is attractive to a large number of Jews, not to the same degree in its application to Zionism, but some of its intellectual and moral perspectives are significant. So how does that make sense? What I just spoke about, how does it make sense to you?
I'm having trouble understanding what you mean, because I don't think that you intend to conflate the need to take seriously a principled moral critique of Israel's actions and the need to take equally seriously a critique of Israel's right to exist.
I wasn't talking about that at all, Yossi.
So there I lost you.
Because that's not what might have been what I said, but it wasn't what I intended to say. And if it wasn't being taped, I would have said, Yossi, you heard me wrong, but I just not, I can't, that's one of the problems with podcasts. You know, you talk and go, I'm saying that the anti-Semitism argument, I think, was clear. That's just evil. I leave that alone. There is an argument against Zionism that I believe we can shut down from. We have to intellectually engage. I'm not legitimizing it. I'm not saying I agree with it. But when somebody creates a notion that the victim is by definition the embodiment of the good, when somebody creates an intellectual, political vision of the world in which nationalism, in which power are denigrated, and we have to win those arguments. These are arguments that in many ways that the future of Israel, the future of Jewish life, but also the future of Western civilization, this is an argument that we have to win. I don't have to win that Jews don't have big noses and that Jews aren't the embodied. I don't have to win that argument. I just have to defend myself against you. But there is an intellectual argument going on in campus life that we can't ignore the way we do so with anti-Semitism. And when we use the term anti-Semitism for all of it, we become intellectually muddled or fuddled.
You know, I used to say that I refuse to engage in a defense of Israel's right to exist. Israel exists. Israel has the right to exist because it exists. Canada, Australia, United States, these were genuine colonial enterprises that didn't have historical roots in the lands that they created their states in, unlike the Jews who were returning home. So that's what I used to say. And it was a bravado argument. And it's also, I agree with you, it's unsustainable. We have to defend Zionism, for me, principally, because we're dealing with an eruption of anti-Zionism within American Jewry. And it's interesting, by the way, that anti-Zionism as an organized force is not erupting anywhere else in the diaspora, only in American Jewry. And I think there's an interesting question to be unpacked about why that is.
What did you mean by the only place it's erupting is in American Jewry?
Within the Jewish people.
Oh, within the Jewish people.
In the diaspora, the only Jewish community that has an organized force of anti-Zionism is American Jewry. And there's an important question to be asked about why that is, what it says about the sense of Jewish at-homeness in America, on the one hand, and what it says about the strength of peoplehood, of historical consciousness among parts of American Jewry. There's a question there that needs to be seriously addressed. But we haven't begun to unpack this, Daniil. The relationship between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. I think of two countries that offer us very different models about how that relationship plays out. On the one hand, you have the Soviet Union, where traditional Russian anti-Semitism gave way to state anti-Zionism. The Soviets understood that after the Holocaust, they needed a fig leaf for their traditional anti-Semitism, and they founded an anti-Zionism. In England, in the Labour Party under Corbyn, the process worked in reverse. It began with principled ideological anti-Zionism, and it gradually legitimized and opened up an anti-Semitic discourse that threatened the safety and maybe the viability of British Jews, certainly if Corbyn would have become prime minister. So there is a dynamic there that's serious and that can't be dismissed. Now, how that plays out on campuses is an open question.
See, because one of the issues is, Yossi, and here I want to put forth a caution. When we call somebody an anti-Semite who is not an anti-Semite, two things happen when we use the term. One, if they're not anti-Semites, we strengthen them because they know that that's not who they are. When we misuse the category, mislabel it, there is a moral indignation, righteousness, and a strengthening because that's not who I am. You're not dealing with what I'm saying. That's one argument. We use anti-Semitism, we use the label, we don't have to engage with any of the content. So the anti-Semitic label actually needs to be used when it's appropriate. But there are so many different features going on here. And it's interesting, and this goes to the second stage of what I wanted us to talk about. When you also label it as anti-Semitic, people are now feeling and experiencing a shift in American Jewish life overall. Overall, like here, we're not safe anymore. And part of it, and again, I don't want to poo-poo and I don't want to invalidate people's experiences. But, you know, on my trips and in your trips, how much has changed outside of campus life in America? Maybe it's changed a little to a certain degree. But to claim that there's this dramatic transformation of North American Jewish life, I know London is different, and I was just reading things about Australia. I don't want to speak about everywhere, but about North America, both you and I, you're there now, and I've spent lots. It hasn't, but when you use the term, there's a panic that sets in. It's this overall, my existential reality has been transformed. And so I want us, there's something serious happening on campuses. Some of it is anti-Semitic. Some of it is a certain progressive, intersectional, moral or immoral, illiberal discourse in many ways. Some of it is based on ignorance. Some of it is based on the fact that this is, this is the cause of the day, you know, let's just, this useful idiots, we could use the term of people who are river to the, they have no idea what they're even talking about and all that above. And some of them are moral critics of Israel who went to the stage of undermining Israel's existence. All of that, when it gets put under this one framework, we disengage, we lose the marketplace, we lose the ability to convince people, we also make our own community more hysterical, and we shut down the intellectual engagement that we have to have because, once you're an anti-Semite, the conversation is over. So this is part of the larger impact on North American life.
Okay, Danielle, you are helping me sharpen a new formulation. I agree with you. Throwing around anti-Semitism indiscriminately is dangerous. I don't think that that is what the organized Jewish community is doing, by the way. There certainly are individuals who are doing that. And raising the specter of 1930s Germany is very dangerous. It demoralizes the Jewish people. It paralyzes us. It makes us look ridiculous, even to many of our friends. So yes, we have to be careful about hysteria. I don't think personally the Jewish community on the whole is reacting with hysteria. But how about the following formulation? Anti-Zionism is a threat to the well-being of the Jewish people. Anti-Zionists, consciously or not, are aligning themselves with the enemies of the Jewish people. So I see anti-Zionists, again, unwittingly or not, as enemies of the Jewish good. And when you frame it in that way, doesn't matter if they're classically anti-Semitic or if this is some new manifestation. This is, to my mind, the great threat to Jewish well-being.
So I accept also that I think we've dissected the categories enough. And the overall point, I believe, that you're trying to make, other than the other ones we made throughout, is that there is a danger here.
And not to lose sight of
And the fact that you're not the fact that you don't want to call it anti-Semitic doesn't mean it's not a danger that you don't have to deal with. But how you deal with it changes if it's anti-Semitic or if it's something else. That was the point that I was making. But let's now shift. And I don't want to belittle. And this I appreciate because I don't want to be in a place where I'm belittling what's happening on campuses because it's not insignificant. Even though it is campuses and even though it's not in the tens of, I don't think it's even close to the 1960s in its scope. Like we're not even in the same ballpark, frankly. I don't know if, I don't think that's what it is. You look at this tent camp, there were 20 tents in Columbia. Now I know Columbia is unsafe and it was, but still there is I don't want to belittle it. It is serious. It's intellectually serious. This is something you didn't say today, but I learned from you in a previous conversation we had where the delegitimization of Israel is becoming a fait accompli. It's becoming a cultural reality. We can't ignore any of that. I actually believe that by not calling it anti-Semitism, we're going to be able to take it much more seriously. But if we can, as we shift to the last issue that I wanted to deal with today, is the way this is being played out in Israel. Now, Israelis, as I've said before, love anti-Semitism. They loved anti-Semitism traditionally because it validated the centrality of Israel, that diaspora Jewish life is dangerous and Israel is safe. And we always in Israel told stories of anti-Semitism in America or France, or, you know, France was great, but America was even better because it offered a competition to Israel. We talked about it and we said, you see, like this is what happened in Israel after Charlottesville, where they, you know, said, oh, you see? Look what happens. Even in America, you're not safe. Basically, come, make aliyah, the whole thing. You know, the Sochnut, Nefesh B'Nefesh, come along. We are the center of Jewish life. But after October 7, Israelis are very, very vulnerable. And the notion of come home because it's safe here is actually something that you can't claim. Or I think you could still claim, but you can't claim it with the same bravado. And without doubt, Israelis are rethinking it. But when they are looking at the anti-Semitic or what Israelis are universally, everything is, you know, for Netanyahu, every criticism of him is an anti-Semitic statement. Or every criticism of it, everything's anti-Semitic. It makes this world, this black-white universe that he wants to live in. But it doesn't function by focusing on anti-Semitism today in the diaspora. Doesn't do what it did in the past. It's not about elevating Israel. In Israel today, the anti-Semitic discourse is playing a different role. And I'll offer one, and then I want to ask your observations. One of the things that it's doing is that it is creating we Jews are all in the same boat. And actually, it is doing something that you said Israelis hate, but I don't think Israelis hate it. You spoke about beforehand that victimhood is the embodiment of all that is good and Israelis hate it. I think in the midst of the war now, there is an over-focus on victimhood as a way of insulating us from any criticism or any conversation. And it is also a deep motivation. It's one of the core lenses through which Israelis see themselves. And so when Jews are victimhood, like we're all victims together. It's almost, we're back. In this sense, we are back in 1930, not in the sense that we're facing Hitler, or it could be 1492, or it could be 1207, or it could be any year that you could pick in Jewish history, where Jews actually were the victims. And as the victims, we actually saw ourselves as the embodiment of the good. We were the only ones who didn't harm other people because we were the victims. And there's an embracing of victimhood now in Israel, which enjoys the anti-Semitic narrative, because we Israelis, you know, and you Jews around the world, we're all back in the place that we actually feel quite comfortable in. And that is as the victim, paradoxically. Do you have a take on this, Yossi?
Yeah, I like very much the way you're putting it. I think you're right that October 7th was a kind of a relapse into the mindset of victimhood among many Israelis, certainly among many diaspora Jews. And we're caught in this kind of pathological loop where on the one hand, we feel ourselves as victims and much of the world sees us as victimizers. And I don't think either category adequately explains Israel today. But there's something that I've learned on this trip to North America. This is the first time that I've been out of Israel since October 7th. And on the one hand, I feel this relief, and it's almost a sense of physical safety being out of Israel, which is very disorienting. Israel, since October 7th, has become the most dangerous country in the world physically for Jews. But at the same time, what I realize being here is that Israel is psychologically the safest country in the world for Jews. And what I miss here is the sense of knowing that everyone around you is going through the same emotional trajectory. And here, every conversation, here meaning in North America, every conversation that you have is potentially charged. You never know which way it's going to go. And I miss that sense of psychological safety.
Interesting. And
so this is the dichotomy that I'm struggling with, because really the sense of relief of just taking a break from the relentless feeling of threat is overwhelming.
You know, I don't want to belittle what, you know, I'm actually very nervous for you, because I know you're near bears in Vancouver, and I'm actually like
and cougars. Danielle, there was a cougar sighting on my daughter's block the other day.
This is like, this is insane. You actually choose. I just want to tell you, like, I'm looking at you with absolute total amazement at your courage and your bravery. For me, it's like insane, like cougars and bears. Oh my!
But they're not anti-Semitic.
They're not anti-Semitic. Okay, God, thank God. Okay, but frankly, but as we said beforehand, Yossi, if I could quote my learned colleague, it doesn't matter. They're dangerous. I don't care what name you give. But I think it is interesting, this sense of, you know, because here in Israel, I'm at home. Here in Israel, I'm at home, and there are dangers that I face, and there are enemies. But I also know who my friends are, and I know they're on my side, and I know where I am, and I know that my legitimacy is self-evident. It is. It's, you know, that is still one of the great blessings of Israel, this sense of at-homeness. And maybe that's what a lot of Jews in North America are feeling, that a sense of at-homeness, not physical danger, but a sense that some of the core principles and things that they care about, and I was reading this as I was following students, they're saying, when I say I'm a Zionist and you criminalize, you're criminalizing part of my identity. Maybe, you know, again, once we use the word anti-Semitism, we don't go to that depth of analysis and thinking, and we just shut down. Just like, as I said, in Israel, the reverse is in Israel, where we use the word anti-Semitism for anything that anybody says against us. You know, so Biden is one day our great friend, and the next day he's influenced by the anti-Semites. It's just a way of insulating us from anything, from anything and everything. And what was the word I made up? Muddle or fuddle?
Fuddle,
right. I think something is changing, but I think we need to have serious tools to make the distinctions so that we could prepare. Because part of what we need to do as a people is not only have a strategy when we go to war, and not only to have a strategy on what we're going to do in Gaza the day after, but what is our strategy for engaging in a world in which the role of Israel, the understanding of Israel, the place of Israel is being profoundly threatened. And I think we better start developing that strategy quicker and not allow any more delays. And Yossi, it's a pleasure to be with you. As always, I learned a lot. Thank you.
Same here. Thank you.
Friends, this is, for heaven's sake, Israel at War, day 208.
For more ideas from the Shalom Hartman Institute about what's unfolding right now, sign up for our newsletter in the show notes or visit shalomhartman.org/Israel at War.